So the question came to me with a raised eyebrow and an expectant expression. Ellen, what do you do for fun? I sensed immediately that the asker had some doubt as to whether I had any fun. And as I searched my memory for the last joyful, outlandish thing I did, I realized, maybe he has a point. Having fun is not top on the list of required attributes for UU aspirants preparing for the ministry. I am somewhat comforted by the fact that I am not alone in this. Having fun is not top of the list of required attributes for most jobs. Still, perhaps it should be. There is something about adulthood that gets associated with responsibility, and something about responsibility that gets associated with drudgery. And before you know it, the fun's gotten squeezed out of much of life. In the words of our first reading, under the weight of our daily responsibilities and worries, we reflexively tune out the fleeting, spontaneous events that can happen at any time, and that if we let them, could bring us deeper joy, even greater health. It brings to mind a story that appeared in the Washington Post in 2007. Gene Weingarten, the article's author, set up an experiment in which the brilliant, world-renowned violinist Joshua Bell would play for an hour during morning rush hour at L'Enfant Plaza, a metro station, through which thousands of Washington, D.C. commuters pass every day. Now, Bell was a child prodigy who showed tremendous capacity already at the age of 4. At 39, he was selling out concert halls and commanding about $1,000 a minute. One composer said that Bell plays like a god. Interview magazine once said his playing does nothing less than tell human beings why they bother to live. So, in other words, the man knows how to play the violin. The Post wanted to see what would happen if a virtuoso like Bell were to play in an unexpected setting at an unexpected time. How would people respond? Would beauty transcend? So, one weekday morning during rush hour, there he was. He put down his case, threw a few dollars in as seed money, and he began to play. The music was exquisite. Chacon from Johann Sebastian Bach, which Bell calls one of the greatest pieces of music ever written, followed by some of classical music's most elegant pieces played with passion, dexterity, and conviction, sounding nearly symphonic, as Weingarten put it. In the time Bell played, nearly 1,100 people passed by. 7 stopped to listen, though some only for a minute. 27 people gave money for a total of $32.17. Weingarten writes, "You can play the recording of this event once or 15 times. It never gets easier to watch. Try speeding it up and it becomes one of those herky-jerky World War I era silent newsreels. The people scurry by in comical little hops and start, cups of coffee in their hands, cell phones at their ears, a dingy gray rush of modernity. Even at this accelerated pace, though," he writes, "the fiddler's movements remain fluid and graceful. He seems so apart from his audience that you find yourself thinking that he's not really there. A ghost. Only then do you see it," he says. "He, the fiddler, is the one who is real. They are the ghosts." We tune out spontaneous events of delight that could bring us deeper joy and greater health. We become like ghosts. To a greater or lesser extent, most of us get pulled into a swirl of daily preoccupations that lead us to miss life's beauty. We're used to moving fast, staying focused, head down, and even though I don't think any of us like the feeling of running through life that way, it becomes familiar, comfortable, almost. How can we be conscientious about the important work we do and also open to spontaneous delight? How can we be responsible while at the same time fully reveling in the exuberance of this world, allowing ourselves to get caught up in the beauty of a compelling moment or getting carried away in pure, unadulterated, purposeless fun, like in that video we just saw? I love the sound of that myself, and I have noticed when I have an opportunity in front of me to be whimsical, to revel, to step out of my comfort zone, I do not always take it. Would I have stopped if I had been at the plaza that day? I'm not sure. And in that video, I have to say, I have a feeling I might have identified with this guy here. Kind of shrinking into his iPhone, everything about his body language, his facial expression is shouting, wow, this cannot be happening. Someone, please, make it stop. Or when I saw a picture a colleague of mine posted on Facebook of himself at an Easter service recently, my first reaction was something like, I would die before I would ever do anything even remotely like that in a worship service or outside it. Now, my colleague, he's a big old alpha male. He has presence, a big booming voice, and I've got this stature. And when combined with this winning bunny outfit, it's striking. He's one of very few people I know who could actually pull this off. So my reaction was a mixture of awe that he could do it and dismay at the thought of even imagining actually ever doing something like that myself. But as a friend of mine would say, my cringy, I can't believe someone would put themselves out there like that dismay, I come by that honestly. Well, I don't remember how I came by it exactly. I don't know if it's my Northern European heritage or my New England gained reserve, but I do know that at some point growing up, it became important to have the right clothes, say the right things, don't step too far outside of the box. I don't remember anyone telling me to do that. I do remember how it felt when I didn't. Like one time in sixth grade choir, we'd been rehearsing for weeks or months, and there was this one particular section where there was a pregnant pause in the song, and our music director had been coaching us, encouraging us. She wanted us to jump in and give it all we got, to be heard, be bold, belt it out, which I did. About 2 seconds too early. It was bold, it was clear, and I was definitely heard. But my sixth grade self wasn't quite ready for that much visibility all at once. Today, I get to choose how much and what kind. But even as I still get just a little bit antsy, a little bit cringy when someone stands outside my social comfort zone and asks me to join them, another part of me at the same time is captivated by the possibilities of stepping out of that comfort zone, away from dignified decorum and into bigger and bolder and beautiful and more alive. This sermon was originally titled Adults Need Recess Too. Which we do. But as I sat with the topic, I found it wasn't just about creating time. There was an element of risk involved. In her morning poem, Mary Oliver asks, "Have you ever dared to be happy?" Stepping out of our comfort zone, whether that is the unfortunate but familiar comfort of being too busy to stop and notice, or whether that is stepping out of the comfort zone of social conformity, it takes a little something, requires trust, openness, and a little bit of daring. Laying aside the call of work or worry takes intention. And while revelry could seem like a superfluous topic when things are hard in our lives, in the country or in the world, when we are struggling with health or relationships, when we hear about hard things in the world, when important decisions are being made over which we feel completely powerless, levity could seem out of place. But I think it's actually at times like this that seeking joy and creating joy are actually most important. Not in a denial of what's hard, but in bold contrast to it. Peter Sharp, the gentleman who instigated the train party we saw earlier and founder of the group Liberators International, also created a TED Talk. In it, he describes a short-lived career as an accountant, which he gave up because he realized his skills were better suited to creating flash mobs that inspired members of the public to participate in creating a better world. He was seeing so much negative news on TV and wondered about the effect on people. Why was it that the inspiring stories about our shared humanity were always left as the fluffy bit at the end, he wondered. But instead of getting upset, he decided to create his own story and see if other people wanted to participate in it. Peter had this idea when he was sitting on a subway. Train rides can sometimes feel a little weird, he said, and they can feel like they leave you a little stuck. So what can we do here, he wondered, to inspire people to believe that we have much more ability to change our current situation than just sitting back and feeling awkward? And they did. The video of the first train party he organized went viral almost immediately. 40,000 people saw it, and train parties started popping up all around the world. Peter himself and all the people who participated were part of creating that 40 million person ripple. 40 million people uplifted by their actions, and we all have the ability to be part of creating positive change. Watching that video from Peter Sharp, I got that he's getting a lot out of what he's doing. He's building something with his energy and commitment, and it's beautiful. Something that other people can participate in or create. And that is exactly the kind of thing that church is about, too. And I gather if I sometimes have an itchy, cringy, I'm not going to get out of my comfort zone feelings, some of you may once in a while have a similar reaction. But I do believe that every time we challenge that feeling, other things become possible and open up for us we could not see before. Every time we do it, there's that impact. Even if you get that cringy feeling, maybe especially then, because it's a sign that something is shifting inside. And when we do it anyway, a little window opens up that wasn't there before. So this month, this week, I invite you to take some step to create more revelry, more joy in your life. It doesn't have to be big, one thing. Maybe it's something you've been wanting to say to someone, an appreciation or a declaration of your commitment. Or maybe it's some artistic endeavor. Maybe it's singing with or in front of people, or acting or drawing and then sharing your artwork. Maybe it's about speaking more of your own truth. Maybe it's painting your nails an unusual color. Whatever you feel is calling you, and especially if some sense of propriety or responsibility is calling you back, holding you back, I go back to these words from our second reading. Sweet cakes, God said, and she's talking to all of y'all. What I'm telling you is yes. And yes, and yes. And so I thought to myself, what would be the edge of my comfort zone today? And then I wondered, in this moment, what might be the edge of your comfort zone today? And so, ladies and gentlemen, some of you have already anticipated, are already ready and grooving. So I'm going to invite you to join me. to participate at the edge of your comfort zone or your body's comfort zone, or just a little bit beyond it. For some of you, that will be coming right up and dancing. For some, that may be sitting and clapping or swaying in your seat. For some, just managing to stay in the room with all this ruckus will be a great triumph. Let the Spirit move you how it moves you.